Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
For tonight, I thought I'd keep things somewhat informal and hopefully brief, because I actually want to hear your reactions to the questions that I have. And I'll be honest, they're somewhat tangential questions, but I still want to hear your answers nonetheless. So basically, I'm trying to figure out if the humanities do have an authentic role in the modern American university. And the short answer is yes, they do, because I want to keep my day job. I teach in the Great Texts program, so I have to be perfectly honest with you. I have a very vested interest in wanting to see the humanities continue to thrive in the university. But I also understand the issues involved. And does everyone need, for example, a so-called liberal arts or humanities-oriented education? I have 6 children, never a dull moment in my house, ages 24 to 12. So 3 are still under the roof, and 2 are alumnae of Baylor University, where I teach. 1 is currently a junior. My 2 oldest daughters did, and I didn't push them, I swear to God. My 2 oldest daughters did Great Text. My eldest son is doing computer science. And my 4th child is discerning a vocation to the priesthood, which is great. We're totally encouraging that. But he wanted to go straight from high school into the seminary. And I said, I know I'm biased, but I really think a 4-year bachelor's liberal arts education will only enhance your vocation to the priesthood. And he said, well, how? They're going to teach philosophy and theology in the seminary. And I said, yeah, but I bet there isn't a single seminary in the world that assigns Moby Dick. And you haven't lived until you've read Moby Dick. Or name some other great, but it forced me to articulate, well, why? Is it just, you know, family bias? Why should anyone care to study the humanities? So what I'm going to do today is begin by outlining what I believe are 2 unpleasant truths about the human condition. Hopefully they're both controversial and you can fight back. Then I will contrast 2 different models of a university: the consumerist model and what I call the human model. And I will let you draw your conclusions. There are more than one unpleasant truths about the human condition, but I'm just going to talk about 2 tonight. The first one is the paradox that human fulfillment requires self-emptying. Human fulfillment requires emptying yourself. Human happiness, Jewish human flourishment, requires a certain self-emptying, a self-denial, a self-sacrifice. In the words of the great Russian dissident Alexander Solzhenitsyn, if you will permit me to share a personal observation, we can only seize true spiritual satisfaction not in seizing, but in refusing to seize. In other words, in self-limitation. It is difficult to bring ourselves to sacrifice and self-denial, he continues, because in political, public, and private life, we have long since dropped the golden key of self-restraint to the ocean floor. But self-limitation is the fundamental and wisest aim of a man who has obtained his freedom. Let me read that again. self-limitation is the fundamental and wisest aim of a man who has obtained his freedom. And if anyone obtained his freedom, the survivor of a Soviet gulag camp, the Soviet exile, if anyone could say, I obtained my freedom, it was Alexander Solzhenitsyn. But he didn't use his freedom to go on become a hedonist. He recognized the profound importance of self-limitation, self-denial. Isn't this a wonderful beginning for Lent? It wasn't timed this way, but as we enter the season of Lent, this is something for us to consider. And I will put things in a more Lenten Catholic key. Here's another quote from then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. You are built for love, and therefore you are built for giving, and therefore you are built for renunciation, for the pruning of yourself. Only if you give yourself, if you lose yourself, as Christ puts it, will you be able to live. So, unpleasant truth number one, human fulfillment requires self-emptying. Unpleasant truth number two, and this is difficult to articulate, and you can help me figure out a better way to formulate this. Self-emptying involves a kind of cavalier attitude about one's death. Now, I ask you to help me with my words because cavalier has different connotations in English. It means kind of glib, not taking serious things seriously. That's not what I mean. Cavalier meaning the chevalier, the knight. The medieval knight was cavalier about his death. He lived for something greater than himself, but precisely because he did, he wasn't fixated on trying to prolong his earthly life. He fought, but his own life, take it or leave it. Right? That's the original sense of cavalier that I'm aiming at. Self-renunciation means willing to go all the way. There is no greater love than that a man should give his life for his friends, our Lord solemnly tells us. True love is not grabbing, it is not seizing, it is being seized and gladly suffering for the sake of love. In other words, to truly love and truly live, we must not stand in fear of death. Or at least we must not see it as the greatest evil. We should remember that there are worse things than the death of the body, like the unexamined life, according to Socrates, or a life filled with vice, according to Cicero. This should not surprise us. Socrates once defined philosophy as the art of dying. And in a Christian key, here's a great quote from Chesterton's Orthodoxy. A martyr is a man who cares so much for something outside him that he forgets his own personal life. The martyr is noble exactly because however he renounces the world, he confesses an ultimate link with life. He sets his heart outside himself. He dies that something may live. And again, we think of the New Testament, Christ Jesus thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, humbling himself, becoming obedient unto death, death on the cross. So, my two unpleasant truths, self-emptying and a certain acceptance, coming to terms with death. Now, when it comes to the modern university, it seems to me that you can distinguish two different models. And the first is what I'm calling the consumerist model of the university. Consumerist in the sense that there's a way in which both the university and its students are in it for consumerist reasons. the students may choose this particular university because it will maximize their chances at getting a good job. So they are shopping the market, and they're looking for the car that can get them the fastest to their destination. And the destination is itself a consumerist destination, right? They want the best university because it will get them the best job, which will get them the most money, so they can be what? Consumers, right? So the whole thing from beginning to end is consumerism. And the same can be said for the university. There are some universities that are interested in ever-increasing freshman acceptance rates because everyone has a dollar sign over their head, right? So administrations have to struggle with, are we here on God's green earth to make a profit like a business, or do we have some other kind of purpose? It seems to me that the consumerist model of the university can be characterized by at least three different characteristics. One is they understand knowledge as a form of seizing. Think of the famous line from Francis Bacon, knowledge is power. In other words, if you're asked the consumerist, why do you want knowledge? The answer would be knowledge will help me get more. More knowledge means more leverage. It means more power. It means more influence. For modern Western history, why was knowledge so important in modern science? It had nothing to do with wisdom. It was the technological conquest of nature. Knowledge meant seizing. Knowledge meant power. And so a student might be attracted to that, like, hey, more knowledge, more power, right? A university might be attracted to that, more knowledge, more influence, more leverage. But the second thing I would say about the consumerist model is with this understanding of knowledge as a form of power comes a fragmented specialization, where you learn more and more about less and less. So it, like, when you think of the great minds of the 19th century, even people like Darwin or great explorers, half of them were amateurs. That is to say, they all received this sort of same general education at Oxford or Cambridge that was oriented towards forming British gentlemen. But then they took that being steeped in a wisdom tradition, and even though they were amateurs, went on and made amazing discoveries. There's nothing wrong with academic specialization. It obviously has great gains, and there's some things you can't do without that specialization. I'm a product of academic specialization, right? The whole thing about getting a PhD, I don't know if the student should know this, but the way you get your PhD dissertation is you narrow it down so much that you probably know more than your dissertation director and maybe five other people in the world. Now, what the only cost is, it's probably the most boring topic on God's green earth. Because of all the billions of people on the planet, and you're the only one interested in this, and maybe five other people, it's pretty pathetic. But you'll get your PhD, right? So that's fine, and that's fine for grad school. What happens when that mentality gets earlier and earlier as an undergraduate? When there's no sort of common core, right? When you're already thinking about becoming a highly specialized doctor your freshman year, and again, nothing wrong with that. I hope to God there are good doctors around me for all the days of my life. But again, are you never going to read Hawthorne? are you never going to encounter something that enriches your life as a human being and not as a specialist, not as a professional, right? So fragmented specialization has certain advantages, but I don't think we should start too early in promoting it. Right? And then the last thing I would say about the consumerist model on a more psychological level is that it seems to have a model of life at all costs. That is to say, it sees life as the highest good, and therefore the longest life, the healthiest life, and the wealthiest life is the best. There was an old bumper sticker from the 80s, the age of greed. He who dies with the most toys wins. And it's a funny line, but I hope you realize how utterly asinine it is. In 1995, I was privileged to attend a conference in Krakow, Poland. This was not long after the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain had fallen. And it was a number of students from the United States, but from Eastern Europe. And there was one man there, this really handsome, strong Slavic Ukrainian man. I have never seen a human being smoke so much in my life. And I'm not a prude about the use of tobacco, but I've never seen someone smoke that much. And the worst part was that they were these nasty Soviet cigarettes. The filter was just rolled up paper and a bunch of loose, nasty tobacco. It was just, ugh. So finally, I was moved to say, you know, in the United States, they have done studies linking smoking to lung cancer. And the guy looked at me, and in this deep Slavic baritone laugh, he said, ho, 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 crazy thing about American man. He wants to die healthy. Like, actually, I kind of want to die healthy under those circumstances as well, but you can understand the point. There's a way in which thinking that, you know, the longest life, the healthiest life, the wealthiest life is the best life. I don't know. That privileging of life at all costs seems to have certain priorities wrong. So those are my three characteristics of the consumerist model. And let me move now to what I call the human model of the university. I'm not trying to be glib by calling it the human model as opposed to the other one, but there is something dehumanizing about only seeing yourself as a consumer, right? One of the things that makes the twin extreme economic systems that we have today, capitalism and communism, one of the things that is problematic about them both is a tendency to be reductionistic. It's a tendency to see the individual or the citizen as a mere consumer. Now, for the record, one of them's a heck of a lot worse than the other. I'm just talking about reductionistic tendencies. Whereas the human university is to a human scale. It's looking at the whole person and not just a certain aspect of that person's existence. So, for example, in a human university, knowledge is not a form of seizing, it is a form of being seized. That is to say, knowledge is a form of wonder. And your incentive to learn is not to gain more power over this world, but to fall in love with the awe of the world. Wonder is being seized by a mystery greater than you, and it draws you in. You don't want to grab, you want to be grabbed. Right? And obviously I think the humanities are an excellent source of wonder, but I also honestly believe every source of knowledge is a potential source of wonder. Every field of knowledge should foster a sense of wonder and beauty rather than of conquest or manipulation. To see the elegance of nature, to see the elegance of a mathematical problem, and to say, wow, or to see the galaxies as an astronomer and say, wow, right? That sense of wonder should be in every single department of knowledge at the university. Also, I would say with this idea of knowledge as a form of wonder, no graduate of a university, no matter their major, should look at the world the same way that he or she did when they first entered. One of the dangers of the consumerist model is that it treats students like an envelope in the mail. They have to go through all these little hoops and they get stamped at the end, but the contents within are never examined. If you go through 4 years at Clemson and your internal contents have never been examined and you see the world the same way as you did as a freshman, you deserve a full refund. Don't quote me on that though. And it also could be your fault as well, because you were, you know, at too many frat parties or something. So, but that's what I mean by the sense of wonder, right? That when you truly encounter knowledge, your worldview is changed, and it gives you a greater capacity for awe. The second thing about the human model of the university is that it does not treat knowledge as fragmented, but as integrated, as leading towards wisdom. Right? That these are not competing departments, but they are all pushing us towards an integrated view. And in this respect, the STEM fields and the humanities should be working hand in hand. They are complementary. They see different facets of our reality. And no one department can do it all, except maybe theology. But other than that, you know, you need to see different contributions from different angles to lead to an integrated view. And that's not easy, but that should be the aim, an integrated view. You know, think of the etymology of the word university. It is turned towards the one. Every class, every department should be turning towards the one, that one single unified vision that is wisdom. And then lastly, regarding life, I think the human model of the university promotes the understanding of life as a wonderful and gratuitous gift. But maybe so is death. I quote to you, not from a great book, but a good book, volume one of Harry Potter. To the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure. I was almost struck by that line, reading it. Why did Rowling say, to the well-organized mind? You could easily hear her say, like, to the courageous heart. You know, death is but the next great adventure. But there's something almost stoic to the well-organized mind. If you think clearly, you will not unduly fear death. You will focus on building character in your own soul. To the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure. So in other words, at least not life at all cost. Because, not to exploit Harry Potter, but isn't that the Dark Lord's problem, right? He wants to live at all costs, even if it means dividing himself into seven dorky parts of his soul. That was the worst part of the novels, by the way. But other than that, it was good. But yeah, life at all costs. And look where it gets him, right? He reduces his own humanity. So I conclude with the question that I want you all to answer: to which model should a university aspire? Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.